Welcome to Season 7 of Game Design Unboxed on the No Direction Network. Daniel Reynolds talks to tabletop game designers about the games they've made. Together they unbox how the game went from inspiration to publication.
With the FIFA World Cup being hosted in Kansas City June 11th through July 19th, Allplay has just the thing for gamers who want to feel like they are a part of the action at home. Golden Goal is a two-player tactical tiny game. After a hard-fought battle, the game is tied and it's down to overtime. The first team to score a goal wins immediately. So unfold an entire soccer pitch from this tiny box as you line up your squad to face down your rival club. Use clever positioning to set up that perfect shot into your opponent's goal, but be sure to protect your own goal as well. Available now at allplay.com for only $10, so check it out. Thank you for joining me, Danielle, for Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, episode 142, Diplomacy, the Golden Blade. Today, we are joined by Roscoe Schock, a freelance game designer. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks, Danielle. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's been cool because, like, you're a part of the New York crew, and I've been running into you for years now, so this is exciting to have you on the show finally. But for anyone who doesn't know you, where did you start your game design journey?
Yeah, so interestingly enough, my game design journey started with this game, which is actually my first published game, the game that became Diplomacy the Golden Blade. So this started back in 2017. I had been playing a lot of like BGG kind of top 100 games after years of playing Magic and doing stuff like that. And I was at a tech meetup in my area, and one of the players there made an announcement about a board game testing event that was going to happen like in a couple weeks and inviting people to be there. And I was like, a what now? So, you know, it was like, all right, I have a deadline. Yeah, maybe I can make a game. Maybe I can turn some ideas I had into something. So that's kind of what launched me down the rabbit hole. I never really tried to specifically like set out to design a game before. The closest I guess I ever came was, like I said, we were playing a lot of BGG top 100, you know, your Puerto Ricos and Power Grids at the time. And we had played some game. I forget exactly what it was. I have no idea. I can't remember. Where like you were building a city or something and you had these cards that were like different power levels, like 1, 2, or 3 or something. I don't know. You like played them to your kind of left or right. But this is before Between Two Cities or anything like that. This is like many years before I started this design. And so for some reason, I was like, I'm going to make some cards that like change whatever part of this game that's lost to history in my mind. And so I had like had this deck of cards with like 1s, 2s, and 3s on it that had some kind of like city pictures. And so when my friend had told me about this, I was like, oh, great, I have that game. So I went home and I found the cards like instantly. I knew where they were. But the thing that I couldn't find, because this was like, you know, 4 years after I'd made these cards that I decided that like I was going to do something with this. I searched like every Google Drive and email and USB drive and like basically like consulted a Ouija board and like I have no idea. I could not find any rules or even like a sense of like what the heck these cards were supposed to do.
You're like, was it all a dream?
Yeah, right. Almost like a fever dream. But I had the cards in my hand. So it was like, clearly I forgot to write stuff down. So that's the first game design tip of like, if you have an idea, write it down. It'll be easier to find. So anyway, it had these 1s, 2s, and 3s. And so I was like, well, I need to make a game that like somehow does this. And so like, that's kind of what launched me down, like trying to create what eventually became the Golden Blade. So that's kind of like the initial start of like how I got down this rabbit hole.
See, I'm pretty good at writing things down. It's more, which journal did I put it in? And then flip through 200 pages of a journal. Slightly different vibes.
Yeah, right. So I had these cards and I was like, well, ideally, like I could make a game before this. You know, I had a couple week deadline to like go to this event. And so I liked the idea of this like power level thing. I had no idea like what it would be. And the cards, when I looked at them, like the best I could remember was something like you turn your power level 1s to 2s and your 2s to 3s, or like maybe you drew these cards and like 3s were rare and 1s were really common and 2s were like in the middle somehow. And like you did something with that. And so, but anyway, what I ended up deciding was, since I had to remake the game, was what if you had like, you're building your power, and the way you build it was you started with nothing, and the first time you add a card, however you do that, you go to power level 1. But then to get to power level 2, you have to add 2 more. And then to get to power level 3, you have to add 3 more, right? So there's this progression.
So is that kind of like experience, the same card you need to put 2 or 3 of?
Yeah. Right. So basically, like, you build them up over time, and like, it's not quite triangular, but it's that same kind of like ramping thing. Right. And so like, you don't get to power level two until you've added that third one. Right. Because you need one for level one and then two more for level two, et cetera. And so that became kind of like the base idea of like what you were doing. And that currently in the game is displayed in your power levels, and it's displayed in a grid. That was in the first version, and honestly, that literally never changed. That was like something that just was always there, and that's how it always worked. The one thing that I did have to spend a lot of time was like how best to tell you what power you were at, right? Because like there's six slots because of the 1 plus 2 plus 3. It was easy for people to think like, if I have two cards, I'm level two, and it's like, no, you have to get to the third card to get to level two, right? That was a challenge visually to like do that, and I'm sure there's some players when they play the real game are gonna the release game I should say are still gonna get that wrong, but like, trust me, I've tried every possible variation of thing we could do to make that clear, and this is the best version. So the second thing was like, okay, you have these units or resources you're going to put down to build this power. And actually, the way you do it is you build it in kind of three areas at once, right? So the initial game was it moved away from city and more to like a country, you know, building its power either through their army, their military, their financial or political. That's initially how it worked. And so you could have varying levels of 1, 2, or 3, or 0 initially in all three different areas. So that's kind of how that part worked. Then the other thing that needed to be added was like, well, now I had this like power grid system or grid of power. This is not the game power grid, but how do you change that? Right. And so I needed these actions that you would play to do that. And so looking back, I can see a little bit of some influence from playing Seven Wonders. Like in Seven Wonders, your military just affects your left and right neighbor. And so that's a little bit how it works in the Golden Blade. And so you're playing orders, and since it only affects your left and right, it's kind of like that's how the actions that you play do. You choose one secretly each turn on your left and right side, and they only affect your left and right hand neighbor, not other players around the table. And those actions initially, like the thing that made the most sense is like, well, you probably need ways to draw cards, you know, cycle through cards, you know, do hand management stuff. And you need a way to like probably build faster, build up your power grid more quickly, or be able to attack each other's. And so when you see the card, you'll see that part, you know, although some tweaks in wording and some moving around, that's basically that hasn't changed very much at all since the first version either. And there are some cards in there that are also defensive. So like there's some cards that block other cards. And so obviously I can see like years of playing Magic, right? You have cards that counter other kind of cards. That's, you know, type specific cards and things like that. So I see a lot of like some of the structure of the cards when you see them for the first time. You can definitely see that, you know, some Magic the Gathering influence in how those cards were built.
I think it's cool because it has that social deduction element of I can see what you've already played out and what levels you're at, so I can predict what cards you might play, and then I might try to counter said cards, and there are cards based off of counters, which I found very interesting.
Exactly right. And so that's one thing that, like, as I'm demoing this to people, it becomes very clear that the game plays like a series of rock, paper, scissors and bluffing games at like multiple levels at the same time. It's like, well, what actions should they play? What actions could they play? You know, which ones will they play on my side versus the other side? You're kind of second guessing each other at lots of different levels all at the same time. So that's something that, like, when players, I usually find that players about halfway through the first game, they're like, oh, I see what I did wrong. Like, I'm ready for, can we start again? I want to like do it right this time, right? Like, that happens a lot.
Oh, totally. And I think something that's interesting, well, I guess, let's get to the point where this mechanic becomes Diplomacy the card game. Like, where in your story does that all start to happen?
Yeah, so that's a great point. So before we talk about Diplomacy the Golden Blade too much more, let's back up and talk about Diplomacy, the original game. So original game was made in the 50s and first self-published then, and kind of more publicly released in the early 60s. So the best way to think about Diplomacy is it's pre-World War I. You play as one of the countries in Europe, like England, France, Germany, etc. And it's a little bit like a Risk style game. There's a map, you have units that are moving around, but there's no dice. There's no really random elements. You start with a default position where you have what are called supply centers in the original game, and you're trying to build up more ones. So the thing with this, there's kind of a resolution system where essentially if people have more power or units and they attack someone else, that player is really just kind of forced to retreat. And there's a whole complicated kind of resolution system. But the thing that drives that and the thing that gives diplomacy its reputation is that each round before you place your secret orders, there's the opportunity to negotiate. And this is like people who are really serious about it, like each pair of people go off to the side and whisper and say, hey, Danielle, let's attack Italy this turn and we'll do this or whatever. And but those promises are non-binding, right? Because I can then go to the Italy player and say, hey, I told Danielle that we were going to attack you, but let's attack her instead. And so all that's fair game. And that's why it has a reputation as a friendship killer. And generally, before the end of the game, some people are going to need to be betrayed because, like, you can't just all cooperate and take over the world, right? Like, it's going to require some elbows. So that's the friendship killer aspect of diplomacy. So, how did this game that became become the Golden Blade with some of these similar diplomacy elements? So, one of the first things that happened is after I had gone to that playtesting event that I mentioned earlier when I first got started, the person who kind of launched me down this rabbit hole was like, hey, like, are you going to PAX Unplugged? And do you have an unpub slot? And I'm like, I don't, these are words, but they mean nothing to me. Like, I knew less than nothing. So like, I tried to book a slot, but Unpub was like sold out. So I was like, well, I'm going to go anyway, right?
Yeah, do the open hours.
Yeah, yeah. So luckily for me, it's fairly close by. So it wasn't too big of an issue there. But I was like, okay, well, I don't know anything about board game design. So like I went on Twitter and like I just started following anybody who had like board game in their title or, you know, just trying to like get a sense of like what board game Twitter was all about. And, you know, I had found a small publisher who was like taking pitches. So I was like, oh, okay. Like, I don't know anything about this. So I went there and like I couldn't meet with him during the regular slots, but kind of after hours at Unpub. So like I showed him my game and, you know, with all the pride of your, you know, first child kind of thing, you know, like it wasn't quite ready yet. So his name is Stephen Cole and he runs a small publishing company called Escape Velocity. But one of the other things is he was running a big playtesting group at the time. And so like that was another great influence in like my game design journey because now I had like a group of other designers to like test stuff with. So fast forward to the fall, now that I knew what Unpub was, when the Unpub Prime at the Horse Hotel was announced, I like grabbed a couple slots. And one of the more interesting parts of this story is, so as they're testing, you know, and sometimes like, you know, especially on like a Sunday, you don't always have testers the whole time. So you're just waiting for people to show up so you can demo your game or whatever. And I was talking to my friend, again, the same one who launched me down this rabbit hole. So we were just chatting about how things were going and feedback and whatever. And someone walked by and like was just kind of taking a look at different games and I didn't know who they were. He was asking about the game and I just said, well, you know, like you're building these power levels on your thing and like you have neighbors and you kind of, this is like the border between your countries and you can like attack them or defend or do whatever. And he's like, oh, okay. This sounds a little bit like Diplomacy the Card Game. And I was like, yeah, I guess you could say that. And he's like, oh yeah, somebody asked me to design that. And I was like, okay, it's interesting. And he kind of walked away and my friend was like, dude, do you know who that was? And I was like, no idea. And he was like in shock. He's like, that was Jeff Engelstein. And I was like, okay, who's that? And so like, he was like, you know, again, this is like just a couple months into my board game design journey. So like, I know less than nothing still.
You're like, didn't know about Ludology or any of the books he's made or any of the games.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, oh, okay. And so like later that weekend, I went up to him, to Jeff, and I was like, hey, like, do you happen to remember who asked you to make this game? Because if some publisher is like looking for this game, like that's an easier way to get something signed if they're already literally looking for it, right? So he was like, oh, actually it was Zev Schlesinger who was at WizKids at the time. And so I was like, okay, didn't know who Zev was either. And so I kept working on the game and I didn't really have any connection to Zev or anything yet and didn't really know him and figured I'd rather like kind of like talk to him in person than just like a cold email or something like that. So I kept working on the game. And one of the things is I started kind of more describing it as Diplomacy the Card Game. and, you know, at different testing groups, and they're like, yeah, I see a lot of the stuff, but like, you know, one thing in the initial set of cards, you couldn't really betray each other. And so one playtester was like, yeah, you need to add something. So like, that's another option. So I added some more extra orders that you would have to play against your neighbors, where like, we both draw extra cards, but only if we both play a trade pact on the same side, right? But if they play a trade pact, I could also just attack them, right? So it gives that opportunity for people to not stick with the agreement that they had. So that made the elbows a little sharper and more of the true spirit of diplomacy, the original game. So a little while later, especially the next year, I decided to go to Proto ATL, again, another playtesting event in Atlanta. And I knew Zev was going to be there. He was listed as one of the publishers going to be in attendance. So I went up to him and I kind of like relayed the story of like talking with Jeff and all this stuff. And he was like, oh yeah, it was actually somebody inside Hasbro, right? So Hasbro kind of acquired Avalon Hill and all the diplomacy era stuff through their acquisition of Wizards. And at the time, this was probably 2019. No, actually I said that wrong. It was somebody from inside Wizards. Cause at the time that it was Wizards that was still running those IPs. So Zev asked me to like write up a document, basically like, hey, what are the things that are familiar, you know, similar to regular diplomacy, right? So there'd be familiar onboarding for players. And like, what are the new kind of selling points? You know, what are the unique things that it has? And so I took some time and I kind of wrote that up. And, you know, I think today still the Golden Blade is not meant to replace diplomacy. It's meant to be an additional thing. And the couple of things that it has going for it is, one, there's no player elimination. So that's one of the unique selling points. In the original, you could get knocked out in the first round, essentially, if people ganged up on you, which is frustrating for a game that takes anywhere to 4 to 7 hours and requires seven people.
Oh my God, for real. Basically like a prolonged dinner party. And it's like, and you're out. And I'm like, what? No. It's one of the reasons I have not played it, but I know enough about it to know not to play it. For me, at least.
Yeah. So the Golden Blade doesn't have player elimination. The original is best played with seven, which is obviously a challenge to getting it to the table. Golden Blade plays 3 to 7. And you can understand that fairly quickly if you just think about, well, if your borders of your country are always just the people to your left and right, doesn't matter how many people are in the circle, you always have somebody that's to your left and right. So it scales, you know, and plays almost identical. There's a couple of things where you have a little less control or a little more control, but like the structure of the game doesn't change at all for 3 to 7. So it's much more easy to get to the table when you only need four people. One of the other things that is a selling point is it plays about 15 minutes a player. So you can play a four-player game in under an hour once you've learned how to play, right? Which is a big, big difference than the original. And so the hope that we have for positioning this game is that like, A, it is an onboarding to convince people like Danielle to try it, a diplomacy style game.
Hey, if someone runs it, I will do it. I will not buy it and learn it. That's where I'm at with it.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Right. And so like you can do, you know, we could play a four-player game in an hour. And it's like, that's a much easier sell to someone than like, hey, like, can you come over all day Saturday and play this game?
It's honestly the reason Twilight Imperium hasn't happened with me either, because I'm like, part of me feels like I need to do it for the flex, but I'm not motivated enough to do it. So someone would have to get everything ready and then invite me and maybe for
you. Yeah, right. That's part of the, you know, the challenge. So like, it's definitely a different experience, but the whole thing is like, this is kind of more of like whet your appetite, nice, tide me over, think of it that way, like get some of the diplomacy feels without like, and be able to do that at like a variable number of players. And one of the other things too that happens in the original game, I was talking before, like there's all these orders and like different countries can kind of attack each other. And sometimes you generally almost need an eighth person because the rules of like are really complicated when like multiple countries are attacking. So let's say everyone's attacking Germany, but me and you are allied together to do it, but like Poland is doing it by themselves. And so who does it first, or like how these things all resolve, like it gets really complicated. And there's like a whole like part of the rule book that's designed to like make that easier. But like a lot of times it still requires an eighth person to just like be the adjudicator of the orders because they can all conflict. With the Golden Blade, like you just kind of go around the circle. They all self-resolve. Like you don't need any extra people to do that. The orders are, because of the way the structure is, like each country border is only between two people. It makes that problem go away. So that's another kind of selling point. Also, this is also going to be the price. It's a lot more portable. It's a smaller box. It's just cards and a little bit of chipboard. And so the price is also about half. So the whole thing is like, this is meant to be a little bit of an onboard and also kind of, I think of it as like a tide me over between the big, you know, mega diplomacy sessions.
Yeah, like if you love the original, but it's too hard to get to the table, so you can use this to try to convince people.
For sure. And cause a lot of people play like only at conventions or, you know, like there's usually in one group, there's like one person who like, this is their favorite game. And so it's like, hey, for my birthday, I just want everybody to come over and play diplomacy, right? So like every year, you know, you just kind of play it at that one kind of event day. But it's not a game that most groups are playing every single week. But with the time shortness, like this could be a filler too, that you could play if you're really into kind of these kind of games and negotiation stuff, you could play it, you know, every game session, right? Because, you know, you could do four players in under an hour or so, just to give players more option and still get some of the diplomacy feels. Great. So I was talking about like pitching these selling points via Zev back into Wizards. So he had sent some emails and then I waited. I'm sure he wasn't waiting around for the answer, but I was sure. And when I would run into at Origins or PAX or whatever, I'd be like, hey, did you hear anything? And, you know, he'd be like, no. He's like, let me try to like push it back in. So I don't know who initially asked for this at Wizards or like if they moved on or whatever it was, but like, that never came to fruition, but I really appreciate all the effort that Zev put into trying to help get the game made, even though that didn't really pan out. So it wasn't long after that, though, that like the world changed. We had COVID and everything shut down. And as things were opening back up, Hasbro decided to like restructure their stuff a little bit. So Wizards' mandate got changed. And so they were supposed to only be in charge of Magic and D&D. And everything else went up to the Hasbro level. After that happened, Renegade at the time had done a couple of Hasbro IP games, but they didn't have access to like the Avalon Hill stuff yet. But in 2022, that changed and they got the license for all the stuff. But it wasn't until about 6 months later that I saw an announcement that like Renegade was printing a new, you know, deluxe version of the original Diplomacy. And I was like, oh, nice. Somebody has the IP and they're actively like putting out new product. I emailed Dan Bojanowski at Renegade and I was like, hey, would you guys be interested in a card game version of Diplomacy? And so like the next day is like, maybe, maybe we are. So that was just actually a couple weeks before Origins. And I knew actually Renegade wasn't going to have a booth that year. But I said, hey, if anybody else is going to be there, then like I'd be glad to like, you know, show it to them. The VP of sales, Andrew Lupp, and Thomas Haver were there. And Thomas basically is the diplomacy advocate and et cetera for, and community manager, I guess is another way to say it, for Renegade. So he's a previous world champion. He does a lot of judging. He runs a lot of events, probably at least a dozen diplomacy events a year. And so I play tested with those two. And then they thought I had a lot of potential. And so actually I even gave my only copy to Thomas to like play with his diplomacy friends, his groups, to see, you know, to play it more and get more feedback from them. So they had that, you know, I'll shorten this part of the story a little bit. You know, I created some like digital like rooms for playtesting on ScreenTop so that we could do like online testing and things like that. It was going back and forth a little bit. There were some delays. I didn't know it at the time, but Renegade was already working on Diplomacy Era of Empire, which is a kind of like modern reimagining of what used to be called colonial diplomacy, which is much more like the whole world. And there's a lot more like sea naval parts to it than the original, which is like just Europe focused. And actually Thomas is one of the designers of that as well. So I didn't know that they had this other diplomacy title kind of already actively being worked on. So the card game idea, I think, was like put behind that in the list, which makes sense, right? You have this 60-year-old franchise. You don't want to just start like slapping it on every game out there and like make feel like a cash grab or something.
Yeah, yeah. Make sure the demand's there in general.
Exactly. So then Era of Empire came out and, you know, I think it did pretty well, did what they, you know, thought it would be. And like they were getting good response from the community and things like that. And so there was a time where Dan said, hey, like, can we set up a online play test with like, in this case, it was four people inside of Renegade. And basically it was like, they're the committee that's basically decides like what to sign and what not to sign. So I ran a four player test of that. And so That went really well, obviously. And like the next day he's like, hey, we want to move forward. We just have to like pitch it to Hasbro, right? Because when you have an IP like this, even Renegade owning the license, they don't get to decide specifically like, yes, we're doing this game or not. They have to get approval. Obviously, that took a little bit of time. You know, a company like Hasbro is not going to rush for most anything.
No, they do not.
But that was fine. And so like we moved forward and we finally got the word that they approved it and then we could move forward. The only thing that they wanted was they wanted a two-player game, a variant. And part of that is there is an official two-player variant for the original and for Heir of Empire. And so they wanted that part of the line to be, you know, consistent for sure. And so in the original Diplomacy, the two-player game is much more of a bidding game. So like instead of having like your initial positions fixed when you play with seven players, you basically bid for countries. Quite a different experience than like the regular negotiation, but can't do negotiation for two players. Even for the Golden Blade, I was like, well, I don't really want to do bidding. I want to keep the spirit of the 3+ player experience the best I can, but like, how can I do that? And so I won't go all the details of that part, but essentially what I decided to do was instead of having just one set of orders on your left and right, you are now going to fight kind of two battles each turn. And so each of the battles would kind of be a separate thing. And so there's a lot more space to kind of outthink and second guess, you know, which order you're putting against which other order from your opponent on each of the two flanks. And then as those things resolve and the order of them, it gives a lot of space for people to outthink each other and try to like, you know, block the right things. And so we now had a two-player version, feeling pretty comfortable about that. There's some other stuff too, where we started doing, you know, kind of online playtesting with more like just general public people. And we made some changes to some cards and things like that. But that's the general gist of the design and the story of like how it became Diplomacy, the card game.
I was going to say, that's quite the journey. How did they decide on the Golden Blade as part of the title?
Speaking back to the backstabbery, to be clear, Thomas, like I said, who's runs all these tournaments and things like that, and was a former world champion of Diplomacy, he was instrumental in making sure we pulled in as much theme from the original as possible. And part of that is when you play a Diplomacy game, generally like at a convention or something like that, there's usually an award given called the Golden Blade. And that is the person who did the best backstab, essentially. So initially, like I was always called the game Diplomacy, the card game. But between marketing and I think even with Hasbro, they wanted it to have like be a little bit more unique than that. They wanted it to have a slightly bigger identity than just like the card game. So yeah, that's just like theme from the original experience of like people who play Diplomacy a lot. They know what the Golden Blade is, that it's just the best backstab of a game.
No, I think that's cool to have that fun little thematic element to the title. And so, I mean, the game took forever, it sounds like, from the initial conception. Like, how many years was that in total?
So the official release date is April 16th. And yeah, I started it in November, December of 2017. Definitely a long and winding road.
I was about to say, I'm like, perseverance. That is the word of the day.
Yeah, well, part of the thing, too, is like, you know, as I kind of related earlier, like, once people were saying was Diplomacy the card game and I started announcing it that way, then I kind of decided, like I had other game designs, you know, that I could pitch other places, but I kind of like stopped pitching it to anybody who didn't have the Diplomacy license, right? Like the thing is, I kind of like said, well, this is going to be Diplomacy the card game with the license or it's not going to get published. That became like part of like, well, I knew it was going to go slower because, you know, I have to wait for that situation, right? We had to wait for Renegade to get the license, and then I still had to convince them to do it, right? But that's part of why it took extra time, was just kind of waiting to get the right contacts with whoever had the IP to get the game made.
Oh, that's awesome. I feel like I've had a few of those where I start working on a game that's based off an IP, and then I tend to just shelve it because I don't really know what to do with it, and I'm too stubborn and don't want to change it. So that's nice to hear that sometimes it works out. Sometimes there's that Cinderella story.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I think like that's for other designers out there too. I mean, it's one thing if like you have only one game design and you're, you know, you're trying to get it out there and get it published, that like maybe like, oh yeah, I'll change it to be this or I'll change it to be that. I had people interested in the game, but they wanted to make changes. And I was like, no, I think I just want to leave it as Diplomacy the Card Game and try to go down that avenue, which is a lot easier to do if you have other designs that you're working on and pitching. Then, you know, you don't feel so bad about having one being in that like waiting state.
Yeah. I mean, do you have any takeaways from doing that specific strategy?
I guess the thing is like, yeah, there is a little bit of like, you know, in the end, I got lucky, right? Like this also could have been a story where like it turned into nothing. I think the one takeaway there is like some of it, you have to decide a little bit what your design goals are, right? So this is a game that I play with my friends. We enjoyed it. And the people especially people who are like kind of in diplomacy and negotiation style games, they enjoyed it. And like not all games are going to get published, right? If you're a designer, you have probably good designs that like you just can't find the right fit, right? The right publisher who wants to do the right thing with it, or they have a different vision and they don't see necessarily what you see. And so I think you just have to kind of understand that like what your success is for that. Like, is it enough that like you and your friends, your testing group, like had a lot of fun playing it and it's there and, you know, maybe someday it'll find a home, but like that doesn't make it a failure, even if it hasn't been signed yet. Or I think part of the other thing too is to keep in mind about product fit, right? So like in this case, from my initial design, you know, I didn't have the backstab cards, right? And somebody said like, well, you can't backstab people. So like, if I'm going to position it as Diplomacy the Card Game, then like I have to kind of hit those same notes, right? And so even if it's a new game that doesn't have to match, you know, an original and a franchise, understanding like how you're positioning it, what the selling points are, and making sure that you can hit those notes so that you can, you know, find that right fit, I think is an important lesson to keep in mind. Like there's a lot of cards that have changed names. There's lots of like what we call all the things in the game have been moved to be more diplomacy like, right? So like it references things the same way they are in the original instead of like me calling it whatever I called it when I started. Especially for IP, like you want that to feel really integrated, right? You want people who know the IP or whatever to like immediately grok what you're supposed to do. So I think that's something you should keep in mind, especially if you're doing IP related stuff.
Oh yeah, I completely agree. You don't want to get the terminology wrong because people will be like, this is a label slap, where now IP games actually are good, unlike back in the day where it's like Monopoly but with Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, for sure.
Did you have like a favorite and least favorite part of working on this game from the design perspective?
So the one thing that is in the game, I said already, you put an order kind of on each side, but the one thing that the game has, which adds a lot of interesting decisions besides the already like rock, paper, scissors, double bluff mindset, is you have a power level in the final version of your army, your navy, and your votes, right? Your political power. Your power level on each one restricts your ability to take actions on that side, right? So the way I thought about this from the beginning is you can't take a knife to a gunfight, meaning if I have a level 1 military and you have a level 2 military, it's kind of silly that I could take my military, generally speaking, and like attack you with it on that side. So the thing that happens in the game is you can't play military cards if I'm level 1 and you're level 2 on that side. If we're the same or I'm better, then I can. So now you lose access to those three orders on my right side per se. But on my left side, we might be both be level 1. So I still have access to those orders. I just have to play them on my left instead of my right. And that same thing is true for all three areas, right? So like each side you develops asymmetrically. And so like the orders you have on each side are different, which ones you can play based on your power level in all three of these different areas. And so that really changes the thing. You can't always just like, oh, this proliferation, which lets you build faster card, you have to have political power to do that. And so if you don't have any political power, you just can't do that. But you know, you're trying to like keep a balance and do these different things. And so that power level validity system is kind of one of my favorite things. And that's been in since the beginning. And people, like when they start to see how that happens, they really, really enjoy it. One thing people ask right away is, when you play an order one turn, is it like gone for some period of time? And the answer is no. You always start your turn with all the order cards. It's just where you can legally play them has changed. And so that's part of the puzzle you have to solve. It's not just what you're trying to do. You know, if the person on your right is building up their military, you have to decide to stop playing military on that side or try to match them or whatever. So that's probably my favorite part. Least favorite part. Yeah, the one thing that still has to happen is like effectively all the orders are kind of resolving at once instantly. And I don't love that we have to kind of like it goes really quickly and it just kind of goes around. That's one thing of why the game is so short per player, is that everything happens simultaneously except for one step. But because the way the orders work, some things might let you draw cards and some cards may require cards to like play them. The order in which these things happen can matter. And so I had to decide to like have this mechanism where you had to resolve them one at a time. And especially like a 6 or 7 player game, that takes a little bit of time. And I wish there was kind of a solution for that, but I don't really think there is. I mean, it's way simpler than the order resolution for original diplomacy. I wish sometimes that there was a way to simplify that for, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 players, but it's not that it's hard or anything. It's just like, you have to kind of like do it in order, which is slightly annoying, but I think it works well. It's just, yeah, slightly fiddly, I guess, maybe.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, we learn a lot of things from both the goods and the bads, and fiddly is not always the worst. I did notice that in one of the videos I was watching on your game, they have these really nifty looking wooden knives that they're doing for like competitions or something, because that's kind of fun, just like as a random side note.
Yeah, some of the tournaments and stuff that Thomas runs, like there's usually like prizes for each of the different things. Who won which? That's one of the things too that I should mention real quick that's kind of fun. And I'll be doing some of that this weekend at Circle DC. We're running a diplomacy triathlon. So 7 players sign up and they play the original diplomacy one day or one, you know, morning or whatever. And then the next day they play Era of Empire. And then the third game is Golden Blade. And so the person who wins the triathlon is like the person who has the best score across all three, which is kind of like hilarious and fun. And so, yeah, there's lots of like awards and prizes and stuff that he gives out for like who did better in this or who had the best backstab in each of the games. That's a fun part of it that people have really, we did it at Battlefront Dayton last fall with a pre-production copy, and like people really enjoyed it. So yeah, we're going to continue that at different major conventions.
Oh, sweet. I mean, it sounds like you got a lot going for this game, and it's cool that this 60 some year old brand is continuing to have new, fresh things. It's always really impressive to see that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that's the big thing that we're hoping with this, is that expands diplomacy community into new people that are willing to try some of it. Like if you play the Golden Blade and you're like, oh, you know, I really like this. I wish there was like a more complex version or whatever. And it's like, do we have some games for you? Right. So like it might be, you know, an on-ramp for like people being willing to try like, you know, a full diplomacy at a convention or something like that and have a slightly different and bigger experience.
That's amazing. And you've also mentioned you've been working on a ton of other games. Do you have any other projects that you wanted to plug?
Yeah, one I can mention. So I have a flip and draw game where you actually create art. It's called Flip Draw Mondrian. So basically you make modern art in the Mondrian style. Basically use it a little bit like a similar to like a welcome to mechanism. And then you use that to like paint your canvas and create Mondrian style art. But it's a pretty tight spatial puzzle. And that's currently slated to come out in October or November. Sorry, I'm not the publisher, just the designer. So that'll be fun. And I also have a co-design, which this one hasn't been announced yet, but I can just say what it is and that it's been signed with Clarence Simpson. We have a social deduction game that's basically Blade Runner, the social deduction game, which has some really interesting twists on the genre. So that's supposed to come out next year. I don't think we have official dates and it hasn't been fully announced by the publisher yet, but that'll be coming out next year, so that'll be fun.
And for then, I guess my last question, unless you have anything else we haven't spoken about for Diplomacy, the Golden Blade, I'd love to know if you could have designed a game that wasn't your own design, which would you choose?
So, and it's probably in my top 3 games to play of all time. Maybe it's first, but The Estates. So if you don't know what The Estates is, it's probably one of the meanest games that's ever been created. It's a bidding game. And it's a bidding game where you're trying to build these buildings using blocks that are numbered 1 to 6. And in general, the blocks are different colors and you can only put a lower number, smaller number, like on a bigger number. So like you can't put a 6 on top of a 2, but you can put a 3 on top of a 6. The buildings get claimed based on their color and you're trying to build 3 streets. In a rotating order, each person picks one new element to bid on. And it uses this closed bidding system where it's a once around. And when you bid, you're bidding actually just to set the price. And when it gets back to the person who chose the bid, they choose whether or not to essentially sell the item that was up for bid for the amount of money, or they can buy it, right? So if the bid is three, I either have to pay the person who bid $3 to get that item, or they have to pay me three in order to get it. But the economy is closed, so there's no new money that comes in. The other thing that makes it extremely mean is the game ends when two of the streets are done. And so you're building three streets of buildings, and all the buildings in the third street that's unfinished are worth negative points. And so the thing that makes that so mean is a lot of times the best strategy and the winning score is zero, because if you can not claim any buildings, people will do everything they can to make that the street that's going to score negative the most valuable street. And so, again, frequently people win with a score of zero. Sometimes it's even like whoever has the highest negative sometimes wins, because there's other items you can do that make the street worth double, and that's positive or negative. So if you have a negative 20 point building and they double it, then that's now worth minus 40, right? And so again, you get to choose things like where to put that doubling thing is one of the things you can put up for bid. So it's not a perfect game. There's a little bit of runaway leader problem with it, but like it does so many things so well, and it's quite a unique experience that if you like bidding games at all, you should definitely try it.
Okay. Yeah. I don't think I've tried this one.
Yeah. It's currently out of print.
Makes more sense why I haven't tried it then. Sounds like something that'd be at like, I don't know, a heavy con.
Yeah. Capstone had released a version of it like probably like 6 years ago. But it's not in, it's not currently in their catalog, but.
Noted. I like trying out interesting mechanics. Shame that it didn't go over. Maybe because of the meanness. I feel like sometimes a game can be mean and it's going to flourish for years, and other times it's like, nope, we're not going to buy this.
Yeah, I think it's a thing where like you either really love it or you really do not like it.
Yeah, divisive games are kind of hard to sell sometimes. Well, awesome. Thank you so much to everyone who's been listening to this episode of Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, episode 142, Diplomacy, the Golden Blade. Roscoe, are there places online? I know you mentioned that you're big on Twitter at the time of your story, but where can you be reached to check out your other games?
Yeah, so it's easy to follow me. My username is my name, so it's just at Roscoe Shock. Mostly I'm on Discord. Blue Sky is most likely where you'll find me.
And then I've been your host. I'm Danielle Reynolds. If you're trying to find me on my personal social media, I'm Token Gamer, and that's G-A-Y-M-E-R. And that's mostly on Instagram. And then, of course, Game Design Unboxed has its own TikTok and Instagram if you're trying to find those fun short-form videos, as well as, you know, my BGG credits. Just go on BGG, which I'm assuming is the same for you. And by that, I mean Board Game Geek.
Yeah, it's just my name on BGG as well.
Sweet. Well, I appreciate you being here. This was such an interesting story.
Yeah, thanks. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you for joining Danielle for another episode of Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication. If you'd like to hear more great gaming podcasts, check out nodirectionpodcasts.com. And if you're looking for a great board game, bag, playmat, or table, check out All Play at letsallplay.com. Join us next time.